Welcome to the Fast Cars, Fast Girls podcast with Abby and Molly. It's been a good week.
It's going to be a good episode, too.
It's going to be a good episode. Feel that bass drop.
I always feel the bass.
Feel that bass drop. You do.
I do indeed.
All right. Well, we don't have a lot of variety necessarily on this episode, but we've got a lot of quality.
I like that.
Yep.
I like that a lot.
We're about quality on this podcast.
Truth.
True story.
True.
So let's warm up these tires.
Yeah, let's warm them up. So here we go. We have a little bit of news about female racers.
We do.
And then we have an amazing interview with James Davison.
Yes, we do. Now, remind me, James Davison.
The Australian who usually only has about a week's advance for the Indy 500.
That's right. Yeah, didn't he fill in for Sebastian Bourdais?
Yes, he did. Yeah.
He did.
He led some laps, remember?
He sure did. And I'm pretty sure he finished second in the overall championship for Indy Lights.
He did.
In 2009.
He did, yeah. And
so he's a hell of a driver.
Kind of a BAMF.
He is kind of a BAMF. Totally humble about it, though.
Yes, very great interview.
Yeah,
Cannot wait for you guys to hear it.
Excellent interview. So yeah, he's a beast. He's a hell of a driver.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a pretty good guy as well. So we hope you guys enjoy.
Yeah.
So let's get into our female racer news.
Just a little bit here. I don't really feel like we are breaking any sort of news when we say one of the biggest things to hit female racer news is that Danica Patrick announced that the race at Homestead, which just happened on Sunday, Martin Truex may or may not have won the championship. I don't know.
I think he did.
I see his name.
I don't know.
I am guessing.
We don't really follow NASCAR that much.
I mean, it's fine. So he won the championship at Homestead. That was Danica's last race for points.
Yes.
Now in 2018, she is running two races, the Daytona, and she's ending at Indianapolis, the Indianapolis 500.
The Indianapolis 500. So I think that's a wonderful place for her to end her career.
I mean, because she
started out in IndyCar.
Yes.
And then to finish there, I think is just a nice way to kind of pay tribute to mm-hmm. where she came from. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you think?
I'm excited for it. I think I've seen a lot of people say it'll bring as much hype as Alonso. I don't know.
I think it will.
I know that Alonso brought more international hype, I guess.
Sure.
Is that I think Danica's going to bring some more local hype. Hopefully they'll sell out and they can play it on the TV live.
Well, the last time they sold out, they still didn't play it live.
I thought they did for the 100th. They did for the 100th.
Did they?
They did. It was kind of a big deal.
I think they only did because it was the 100th. I don't think they'll do that again.
That's true.
Yeah.
But I'm excited to see it. What can be said? Because there's a lot being said.
There's a lot being said. And there's a lot of hate. There's a lot of people who hate Danica or who dislike her. And there are a lot of valid reasons for that. But
that's
I will
true.
Say this. If your reasons are sexist, then I'm not going to tolerate them.
GTFO.
Like GTFO, we're not having it. So if you don't like Danica because in the past when she raced for IndyCar, if anything went wrong, it was everybody's fault except for hers.
Okay.
That's a personality problem.
Yeah.
That's a person problem.
That's a her problem.
Yeah. I understand that. I'm not a fan of any driver that thinks that everything is never their fault. I'm not a fan of any person that thinks that nothing's ever their fault.
Yes.
Like maybe your life just sucks because you make poor choices and you have to face the consequences. So yeah, but other people, are getting on her because she, did all kinds of advertising that accentuated her sexuality and all these different things. But when you hear about how hard it is to gain funding, like the system's broken, but if you can use it to your advantage, knock yourself out.
I mean, you gotta do what you gotta do, boo-boo.
That's how I feel about it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it'd be great if it was more fair, and that any drivers didn't have to go and try and gain as much funding as possible, but that's not the state of affairs. And especially not for female drivers. They have to, I mean, they're fighting an uphill battle even more than your male drivers. So if she can do something as a female that gets her more sponsorship, live your life.
Do it. So it'll be
exciting.
So
you can
to
do
see.
What you love,
Yeah.
But it will be exciting to see.
I think it'll add some excitement to the race, and I'm excited about that. We had the excitement last year for Alonso. We had the excitement the year before that for the 100th. This year we're going to have Danica.
Yeah.
Or this upcoming year we're going to have Danica.
Yeah.
I think it only does good things for the sport.
I agree.
I think people are missing that point, too. We're bringing in, people will watch it. There'll be NASCAR
crossovers.
Yeah,
we'll have some more NASCAR crossover because she's been racing in NASCAR. I think you'll have more local.
Yeah.
I think that we'll see more local people getting involved than, you know, international. Like you said, Alonzo brought the international crowd.
Right.
But yeah, I feel like it'll help with attendance.
I think we might see another bump in attendance.
I would love that. And I would love for there to be a day where she and Pippa are doing a very, like, you know, rah-rah-rah girls in STEM.
Oh,
and yeah, I would love to see that.
I would lose my little mind.
I would love to see that. I mean, the press release writes itself.
Yeah.
It's great.
I could write it.
It's great.
It's cool.
So.
You can contact me.
You can hire Molly anytime. But yeah. And I will say for Danica, I mean, she has qualified the fastest of any female to ever run the Indy 500.
Yes.
And she's finished the highest of any female to ever run the Indy 500.
She led laps at the Indy 500.
She's the only female to have ever led laps at the Indianapolis 500. So whether you love her or hate her, you know, her motorsport career was not as successful as her fans wanted. It wasn't as successful as her sponsors wanted. And I guarantee it wasn't as successful as she wanted it to be.
100% agree, yes.
And so... No, I'm not saying that she's, you know, the end all be all driver that, you know, everybody should, you know,
bow down to,
or, you know, try and replicate her, you know, her system. Mm-hmm. But she has done some pretty awesome things for women in motorsports. And she has gained so many firsts for women in motorsports.
Yes.
Whether you love her or hate her, you can't deny that. And that
those
things, they get you respect.
I mean,
I think that's awesome.
If you think
that she's not a great driver, well, then I want to see another female come in and take those things away from her.
I think, like, everybody would be, including Danica, I think at some level be okay if somebody came in, busted all of her records.
Yeah, if a woman came in and they were like, oh, well, I qualified second. I qualified pole position. I, you know, whatever.
Yes. So, And yeah, her attitude can be bad, but I think sometimes we have to remember, we actually don't get to choose the people we put, you know, who get to break through the glass ceiling. Like, sometimes...
We don't.
You have to do with it. Does she have a little bit of an attitude problem?
A little bit.
It's fine. Okay. But she has done so much for the sport. You can't let her attitude overshadow everything that's done.
Everything
for
that she's done. It's not... Sports. Yeah, that's not bigger than what she's accomplished.
It isn't.
So
and by the way, speaking of another female racer, I want to throw this in here. So we talked about Tatiana Calderon... four or five episodes ago.
Sure.
She's the... I am blanking. It's been a long night. She's been the development driver in Formula One. Well, this past weekend, she got third place at the World Championship V8. So she got a podium. It's a woman on a podium. So
that is awesome.
Very
way to
excited.
Go, Tatiana.
Way to go. Way to go.
Way to go, Tatiana. Well done.
Little news.
Well, earlier today, I went grocery shopping.
Oh, you did?
I did. And... I'm telling you this story so I can tell you another story.
Okay.
Because every time I go grocery shopping, I see the cart corral. And there are people that put their carts back in the corral, and there are people that don't. Yes. And for those of you who don't, fuck you.
Yes.
It's just not nice. It's just not nice. And I was at a Target a couple of years ago. And I was returning my card and a few other stray cards.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a mom and her five-year-old son, four or five, somewhere in that age range. And they were returning their cart and had grabbed a few strays as well. So we're kind of meeting at the cart corral together. And I happened to overhear the conversation between her and her son.
Yes.
And her son says, Mommy, why doesn't everybody put their carts back where they go?
Hmm.
And the mom says, well, sweetheart, some people are assholes. And they don't realize that we live in a goddamn civilization.
True.
And I lost my shit. I high-fived the mom. And I have just taken to that that statement about life ever since.
That's
so
a good statement.
So since we're coming up on winter, when we know we're going to have snow and they're going to be plowing snow into parking spaces, so we're going to be losing spaces just from snow piles.
Mm-hmm.
Do the rest of us a favor and return your carts, because the last thing we need is more carts in spots that we don't have. We don't want to hit our cars with them.
No.
We don't want them to hit somebody else's car when we're trying to nudge them out of the way. I get it. The weather's bad. That's when you absolutely should put it back. And so we made a phone call to...
We reached out to the Cart Boy Association of America.
We did. Yes. And a lot of people say that they do it so that people have job security. But what they don't realize is those cart boys have other jobs. Their job is not to round up all the carts. They have other things that need to be done.
Like carrying your groceries if you're an older lady.
Yes. or getting something heavy off of higher shelves.
Yes.
If you have any kind of back injury or anything like that, every grocery store will have somebody shop with you and, yes. and put the heavy things in your cart. They will even push the cart for you
yeah.
or just take it straight to the checkout.
Very nice.
And so when you lose out on things like customer service, it's because they don't have the time to do that. No. Because assholes are not putting their carts back.
They're really not. So we called them.
We called them.
Yeah, I did.
And we got them to sponsor us for the winter.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to tell that story and just pass along this message that please put your carts back.
Please return your carts. You know why?
Because we live in a goddamn civilization. That's why. All right, so we're very excited to announce that this week we have on with us race driver James Davison.
Woo!
So he hails from Australia, but he's actually stateside right now. I think in Miami. Is that right, James?
Yes. Back home in Miami.
Back home in Miami. We are very jealous of your winners.
Yeah. It's the coldest thing here is the air conditioning when you walk in the buildings, that's for sure.
What a hard life you guys have.
It's tough.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of hard years before, you know, you see the glitz and glam of the fruition of being a racing driver. And yeah, for sure, it hasn't been like this the whole time. It's taken a long process and fighting through quite a big headwind in my career to get to where I am right now. And like anything, you want more and more, so I'm working hard to achieve that.
Absolutely. And you've been driving for quite a while, so why don't you tell us how you got started, how you got interested in driving?
Yeah, well, I'm third generation racing driver.
You are?
My grandfather won 4 Australian Grand Prix in the 1950s and 60s. So he raced against many, famous Formula One drivers like Jack Brabham, Bruce McLaren, Graham Hill, Jim Clark. Obviously, yeah. Three of those names have quite a presence, or all of them, all those names have a presence at Indianapolis.
Absolutely.
In all kind of honesty, my family name is a little like an Andretti Ornser in Australian motorsport. So after my grandfather passed away racing, which, you know, was quite common in that era because there was just no safety in the, 50s, 60s, really. Obviously, as we know, it only really started to get quite safe probably about 20, 30 years ago. My father raced and his brother did also. After my father retired from racing Formula 5000s, which is what Mario Andretti raced in the 70s also. Mm-hmm. So my father raced against James Hunt and has some pretty fun stories, like you hear about James Hunt with the whole deal and was friends with him. And after my father retired from racing, he took over running a race circuit called Sandown that the V8 supercars race at. And so mm-hmm. I grew up going to that track as a kid and I had racing in my blood and was exposed to it since I was born. So I loved it. I had more of a passion for it than my brother did. So in the end, my father supported me into racing. It was actually my mother that got me into go-kart racing because my dad was a bit skeptical to get me into it since he'd lost his father, obviously, in the sport. And it's just a tough career road, you know. There's no guarantees that you're going to make it. So
absolutely.
I only did a year and a half of go-karts when I was 10 to about 11 and a half, and then I just had to focus on my high school education. And yeah, then when I was 17, finally my dad let me race Formula Fords. And then the next year when I was 18, I came over here to the States and chased the IndyCar dream. And that really mm-hmm. came from growing up going to the race at Surfers Paradise, even though I was from Melbourne, where Formula One is, and grew up around that. yeah, I grew up going to the IndyCar race as well in the late 90s, and obviously that was when IndyCar racing was in its heyday.
Absolutely.
Massively, yeah, prosperous, and you know, the big 900 horsepower turbocharged V8s. I mean, the series was as good or better than Formula One back then.
Oh, it absolutely was.
Yeah.
I mean, Ari Langdijk was breaking records left and right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, obviously, this was kind of the kart series that I saw.
Oh, that's true.
But all the top teams were there. You know, you had Penske, Ganassi, mm-hmm. Newman Haas, Forsyth.
Yeah, the
all the names, all the drivers, yeah. DeFerrin, Montoya, Andretti, Vasser. Mm-hmm. I mean, Zanardi, it goes on. And yeah, I mean, that if that didn't inspire a kid to want to become an IndyCar driver or a racing driver, there was nothing that could, because, I mean, it was just pure awesomeness, really, what that kart series was back then. So, yeah, that's what inspired me to chase this dream. So, just worked really hard at it over the past, you know, 12 years or so here in the States, and yeah, kind of, you know, fought through a few headwinds, especially when the global financial crisis kicked in. That put a headwind in a lot of young drivers' aspirations, and if you just weren't in the right place at the right time, you didn't get your break.
Absolutely. It seems like a lot of it does kind of come down to, you know, who you know and a little bit of luck.
Well, it does. I mean, I remember when I was teammates with Justin Wilson, and, you know, he said to me, you know, any kid asked me for advice, you know, like, you can work as hard as you can, but a lot of it, or a good chunk of it, just comes down to luck, and it really does, you know. And obviously there's a whole variety of reasons that put drivers in seats, and you've just got to play the cards that you're dealt and do the best with it. And for sure, when you've earned it on merit, it definitely makes it more, you know, gratifying. There's no question about that. So,
oh, I'm sure. What would you say is like the biggest struggle that faces up and coming drivers, and even seasoned, experienced drivers like yourself?
It's the financials behind it all, and then the other thing is getting an equal equipment, because your brand value just goes right up once you get in equal equipment. So, you know, I had a bit of a breakthrough year this year where I obviously found myself in Sebastian Bourdais' car at the Indy 500. Mm-hmm. They were obviously Dale Coyne Racing was obviously very hooked up. And, you know, I got in the car. You know, it wasn't right straight away since it was the backup car and all that. But ultimately, all the, you know, engineering and hard work was going to surface there once we got to the race. And, you know, that's what happened. We went from last to first. And
absolutely.
I was able to feature, obviously, at, you know, the biggest race in the world in a year that Alonso was there. So you had a massive audience. And mm-hmm. And, you know, in all honesty with you, I did nothing different than I had any other year. I just had a car that was equal to the other guys up the front.
Absolutely.
And then you're up there. So that's definitely one of them, you know. And also I did, you know, these NASCAR races with Joe Gibbs in the Xfinity series.
Yeah.
And again, I did nothing different than I had in the past, and I'm at the very front, you know, winning stage races in NASCAR. So it just goes to show you got to get in the right equipment some way or the other, and it definitely is a process for many. I mean, I think Justin Wilson's one of the prime examples. I mean, he was just forever not in the right equipment, and then finally got into an Andretti car, and yeah, obviously very tragic what happened, but yeah, it just took him like his whole career to get the opportunity that he deserved. And then you've got other guys that just, they start in the best team, if it's like Montoya with Ganassi or what have you, and then your brand value is very high straight away. So yeah, they're the two things for sure. The financials are number one, and then being in the right equipment number two, and then of course you've got to, you work extremely hard at your craft and be very determined, you know, more determined than the next guy, go that extra yard. And I think a lot of young drivers have got to realize that you've got to be as good of as a businessman and nearly an engineer as well as a racing driver these days, because yeah, you've got to be able to get the backing and support behind you one way or the other. Yeah. And if it all doesn't fall on your lap like it does for a small amount, you've got to make it happen yourself. And so there's a huge amount of networking and selling yourself, and it's a tough line, because it's, you know, you don't want to be talking about kind of what your ability level is. You want to be showing it, but yeah in a way you've got to talk about it to be able to get support behind you. So yeah, it's a really tough road to the top, but when you make it, it's all worth it.
I'm sure. Yeah, we've talked about that before on our show, just about how, you know, it's unfortunate that the best drivers don't always have the best seats, because so much of it comes down to funding. And we've actually talked about you on our podcast as well, because we went to the victory banquet. And I told you we met your dad at the 500 victory banquet this year, and chit-chatted with him, and he was quite the character.
That's about the most simple way to put it, for sure.
Oh no, we loved every minute that we talked to him. We probably stood with him for 25 minutes, and just chit chatted. You know, you, like you said, you didn't do anything different at the Indy 500 this year. You just had better equipment, and what a difference that makes. You know, because the way that you drive and the way that you handle the car isn't changing. It's just, you know, having better equipment is such a huge piece.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. It's such a big thing. And, you know, like with Alonso, there was just no way that he wasn't going to feature. You know, he's a good driver, mm-hmm. and he was going to jump in the best team, you know.
Yeah.
It's just, it was a given that he was going to do well. There was never any doubt about it. So
absolutely. Now, how was the Indy 500 for you this year? Because you obviously had, you know, just about a week's notice that you were going to be driving in the Indy 500.
Well, yeah. I mean, okay. So I've done the 500 three times now, and I've known that I've been doing the race 3 weeks before, a week and a half before, and a week before. I mean, I think I'm the only driver in that position. I mean, I have made it by the skin of my teeth.
Yeah.
I remember Ed Carpenter walking by me, or wherever it was at this year's 500, maybe at the media day on the Thursday, I think it is, before carb day, and just laughing and going, dude, you always just make it. Like, you kind of blew his mind. Sorry, I got plane flying over me.
No, you're fine.
You're fine.
But yeah, I mean, I've just absolutely made it on a wing and a prayer. And yeah, I've done three 500s and I've qualified for one of them. And I've only ever done, I think, two, maximum three practice days.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Any time I've done the race. I mean,
that's impressive. That speaks a lot to your ability as a driver, because there's a lot of drivers who just can't handle the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. It's a big track, and it's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, so you definitely got to be brave and just kind of understand, have a very good feel for a race car on the absolute edge, because obviously you're on that the entire time. And I don't know, I've just kind of felt I've been able to get very mentally disciplined and just focus on what I got to do and not worry about, you know, excuses and what other people, you know, think, you know, how you may look when you're not running too well, because, yeah, you know, well, like I said earlier, you just got to play the cards that you're dealt and make the most of them. And so I was in this same boat essentially when I made my IndyCar debut in 2013 at Mid-Ohio. I got notice 2 weeks before the race from Dale Coyne that I was going to do my IndyCar debut.
Yeah.
I hadn't raced full-time in 4 years. I hadn't raced open-wheel cars in 4 years. you know, this DW12 Indy car's got just a huge amount of downforce. It's just not something that you can just jump straight into and you'll be quick like a GT car or something, because it's just overwhelming how kind of fast the car is initially when you're not, yeah, when you're going in cold turkey. Like I said, I'd done Indy Lights 4 years before, and then the fitness side of it as well is so tough because obviously everyone's three quarters of the way through the season. They've done all the testing. Some of the guys have been driving the cars for 10, 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
And then you're making your debut just absolute cold turkey. And so it was extremely tough initially. I mean, just, but I just was super focused and come qualifying, I found myself freaking out qualifying Graham Rahal, Newgarden, Kanaan, matching Elio in my qualifying group. So it just goes to show, if you just put all the adversity aside and just focus on what you got to do, that you can get it done.
Absolutely.
I think it also means
so yeah, I mean that's kind of relatable to my Indy 500 deal. I've never known any different. I've never had the luxury of having preparation anything like that. So I mean, obviously you'd think, why doesn't a team owner like see that and give you a shot?
But well, that's what I'm asking right now.
Yeah, you know the economy of IndyCar racing. It's, you know, the teams don't have a lot of money, and ultimately, yeah, if you, 9 times out of 10, you got to bring some funding along with you, and yeah, the Indy 500 is that race that you can make it.
Yeah,
you can get the funding behind you much easier than the other ones for obvious reasons. It's, you know, the biggest race in the world, and obviously all the other races are quite insignificant. You know, I think it's not an unfair thing to say. So yeah, look, this year's 500 was all I knew, and I guess I got the nod from Dale Coyne to fill in for Bourdais, because exactly, you know, what the task was what I'd proven I could handle, being able to jump in with no preparation, start last, and move forward. So yeah, it was certainly a breakthrough for me, like I mentioned earlier, and it's put me in a position now where I have sponsor support behind me that will enable me to get a ride early, and yeah, hopefully a very good one as well. So
that's excellent. Do you want to plug in your sponsors? We're happy to.
Look, at this point, probably prefer not to.
Okay, no, that's fine. If it's a little too early for all that, yeah.
You know, like, I'll get the opportunity to do that eventually.
Okay.
We're a small
production here, so I'm like, if you need to drop some names, you go right ahead.
Yeah. I'll just keep it confidential for now, and I think it should all surface in due course.
Is one of them Outback Steakhouse?
Stop it.
It is not, but I'd be lying if I said I didn't try to get them on board.
I don't know why they wouldn't sponsor you. I think that'd be a great fit. I worked at Outback Steakhouse for like 5 years. Yeah, I did. Molly and I are both mostly vegetarian, meaning most of the time we're vegetarian, unless we're drunk and then all bets are off. But I worked at Outback Steakhouse while I was a vegetarian.
Wow, you cheated.
No, what's funny is that I had worked there for 2 years before I'd ever had any of their steaks. But when people would ask me, you know, but I still know cuts of steak. So they'd be like, what's the best one? And I'm like, you want the filet or you want the porterhouse? Yeah. I'm a big supporter of Outback, so I would fully support that partnership.
Yeah, it would make sense, wouldn't it?
It would. I mean, their motto is no worries, just right.
Yeah.
That's insane that you remember.
Yeah. So, I don't know, maybe they've really done nothing in racing that I know of. I think something small in NASCAR or for a short period of time.
Yeah.
They did something. Maybe with Dale Jarrett, if I had a very vague memory. I can't remember, but anyhow,
He was the first driver to kiss the bricks at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Yeah, I remember growing growing up watching him, and you know, now he's commentating on the NASCAR Xfinity races that I'm doing. So it's kind of crazy how it all plays out from
that
when
is.
You're a kid to when you make it. You know, you just would never dream that all these kind of like legends could know mm-hmm. who you are mm-hmm. or respect you. You know, as he seems to on television, but. Yeah, it's pretty cool how full circle it is. You know, all these guys that grew up watching at Surfers Paradise in the kart era.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
they were absolute heroes, and now you know them all pretty well, or you're still racing against some of them, right? Like Elio and Montoya,
yeah.
Kanaan. So, but very quickly you realize that they're just
people.
They're just you know, other racing drivers that you got to beat that have only got two arms and two legs like you do. So, yeah, it's kind of funny how that transitions.
Yeah, when would you say was the first time in your career that you kind of had that realization moment of, like, I've made it, I'm on the same level of these drivers that I've looked up to my whole life?
I would say...
That Mid-Ohio qualifying, or...?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, I got out of the car and, you know, I didn't know exactly where I looked, and I looked at the timesheet and I'm like, I was kind of like surprised, you know, I was like, how was I able to do that with just no preparation? And it just very quickly tells you that, you know, you can achieve your goals and dreams if you work extremely hard at it. Yeah, oh God, when I think back, God, I put so much pressure on myself to perform there and worked hard, and that's what you got to do, you know, if you don't kind of catch the right breaks and so on, it's, you got to work even harder than hard. So yeah, it would have been that Mid-Ohio deal, you know, you're on track with Scott Dixon and all those guys yeah, but very quickly they just become other cars and drivers that you got to beat and so on.
So you had mentioned earlier you've done NASCAR this year, a bunch of sports cars, an IndyCar. How is it that you can just seamlessly transition through all of these different cars and all these different
because
types?
Because you seem to do very well. You seem to drive well in every type of racing.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, look, I think that there's no substitute for experience.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main thing, you know. Experience guides you. It's something you can draw off of.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of like computer programming, you know. You just kind of plug into your hard drive and you draw off it. And then it also provides confidence where you are able to jump in a car and just be very relaxed, not overthink it, and then just execute. And so that's essentially what I feel is part of it. And again, you know, I've never had a lot of time and preparation, so it's all I know, you know, just being able to jump in something and having to get on it straight away.
Absolutely. Well, I think that, you know, some of that being able to get into that mindset of trusting yourself, trusting your intuitions, you know, with your experience, that comes with age and maturity as well. But also, you've kind of had you've had multiple trials by fire. Like you said, you haven't really had any other choice. So you've always just had to have a good mindset and be able to, you know, not have any anxiety or anything about that. Just come in and even if it's a small amount of time, get to work.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. So, certainly there is some anxiety there, you know, because you want to do well, you know, and you don't want to look second rate and all that stuff, but you just got to turn it into determination to fine-tune, round the edges off and learn very quickly and execute when the time comes. So, like I said, like Mid-Ohio debut, I wasn't really anywhere in practice, you know? And I was like, thinking to myself, like, God, I feel like I'm driving well. Mm-hmm. But obviously I didn't have the experience. I needed more laps and more laps. And so, yeah, by the time qualifying came and you put it all together, you know, you can achieve some things that you weren't really sure that you could have at, you know, 30 minutes earlier. So it's
quick turnaround.
You know what I mean? I'm sure, like in the Olympics, you got a lot of athletes that go out and just perform amazingly when the pressure's on, mm-hmm. and they just blow themselves away, and they're like, how did I pull that off? You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's
obviously
a lot to be
said. Some of them mess it up, don't they? You know, some of them really mess it up, but you can, and we all will mess up at some point. But yeah, you can pull it off.
Good. So what would you say is your favorite memory from your racing career? And it can be your favorite for any reason.
I would have to think it'd be leading the Indy 500 this year, because it was so unexpected. None of us expected to be in that position. You know, we went into the race with realistic expectations because we were starting dead last. We had the backup car that was known to be, you know, just not the best piece that Dale Coyne Racing could put on the track because of the situation where, you know, they just had limited spares. And we thought, look, if we could get a top 10, that's going to be like a win for us. And then we found ourselves up front, but then also racing, you know, for the lead. And, you know, in the end, we ended up, you know, crashing out in the big pile-up.
Yeah.
But, you know, that came about because I wanted to win it. You know, I could have just brought the car home, you know, fifth or sixth. But obviously, the Indy 500 is all about winning it. If you win the race, it'll change your life, mm-hmm. as you've seen at Doofer, like Rossi.
Mm-hmm.
You think of the contrast. If Rossi had ran out of fuel just a little earlier and he didn't win the race, how much different his career would be right now?
It would be, I mean, 100%. Night and day.
Yeah.
It'd be completely different. Yeah. He would be the rookie that was an idiot and didn't balance his fuel, right?
I would, you know, say more appropriately, you know, he was one of many drivers that tried and could have won the Indy 500 but didn't, and so as a result, you know, you're forgotten by the guy that did win it. Look, I went for it. In doing so, you put yourself in a position to get to be at a higher level of risk, and it didn't come off. But like I said, had I won it, it would have changed my life. Had I finished fifth or sixth, it wouldn't have. So I have no regrets. You know, you can go for these, you can go for it and you pull it off and you're a hero.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can go for it and it doesn't come off and you're not, and then you just try again. So that's the way I look at it.
I mean, absolutely.
You know, and I think ultimately, you know, Dale Coyne and Geico would, you know, they were just thrilled with basically the run that we had.
Oh, you had a great run.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't care that, you know, the car got messed up or what have you, because that's just part of the sport, you know. I said to Dale in the garage, I said, look, I'm sorry about your car, but I tried to win the Indy 500 for us. And you know, he totally was on board with me. He was not upset at all, and the Geico guys were loving it. And Vassa, I remember Jimmy Vassa saying to me before the race, because he was involved with the whole Geico deal there, you know, he said, you know, man, if you crash, you know, racing for 15th, you know, don't bother coming back and talking to us. But if you crash out trying to win the thing in the last stint of the race, it's all good, you know?
I mean,
that was the only time I've crashed in IndyCar, and in a way, it's probably about the only real time that you should crash one trying to win the Indy 500, I guess.
Absolutely,
100%.
I say if you're gonna go balls to the wall in any race, it should definitely be that one.
Yes. So, yeah, that would be my career highlight. I mean, obviously, leading, you know, winning a NASCAR stage this year was big. You know, we were odds on to win the race overall at Road America, but got taken out.
Yeah,
yeah, just crazy unlucky what happened. If anyone saw it, oh, my God. Just one guy got hooked across the track right when I was there, and just wrong place, wrong time, nowhere to go. But
that's the worst, when you can't even do anything to...
Yeah, yeah.
To try and avoid it.
But yeah, I mean, it's got to be Indy. It's got to be Indy. I mean, I remember just, yeah, being in the lead there and not getting excited. It was more like, wow, I've got the world to lose right now, and I want to try and win this. And so I'm sure I've been one of many drivers in that position where they're like, damn, I have a shot at winning the Indy 500, and you don't get excited. You get actually a bit... I don't know, maybe apprehensive,
or yeah.
Just because you know just how life-changing it'll be. So hopefully get the opportunity to experience that again
yeah.
a few times in the future, hopefully.
Yeah, we'd love to see you back at Indy this year.
Yeah.
We would.
Yeah.
Yeah, we would love to see you race again. Well, and I'm sure there's probably a part of you when you were in the lead. Well, I don't really know you. But if it was me, I feel like a part of me would be like, is this real life right now?
Yeah.
Like there'd be a moment where it was just kind of surreal. Like I'm leading the Indianapolis 500. Is this real life?
Yeah. I mean, like obviously you're in a different position when you're in the car, you know, you're so in tune with what you're doing, what
sure.
it looks like from the outside. You know, what the commentators are saying and the whole spectacle of the race, you're closed off to that. You're in your own little world there where you're just focused on the next tenth of the next set, you know, partial second of your life. And you're just executing every millisecond at a time. And
so you're just more focused on your precision and you're more looking at the small picture than the big picture, just because you're just taking each mile as it comes, basically.
Yeah,
and also, you know, when you've kind of backed yourself and you've had confidence in yourself for many years to you know, really help you achieve your goals, which is obviously what you've got to have.
Mm-hmm.
You got to believe in yourself. You know, when I did find myself in that position, I just thought, like, all right, this feels right. You know, I've worked extremely hard to achieve this, and you know, here I am right now. And yeah, I don't want to lose it, like I said. But it's much easier to lead the 500 than win it. You know,
oh, absolutely,
so many things that go in there, and a lot of things they've got to play your way as well. And so, you know, they say that the track chooses the winner there, and it really does. You look at how crazy things that happen. I mean, who would have thought that, like, J.R. Hildebrand could have hit the wall in the last corner of the last lap? I mean, he had it won. He freaking had it won. Like, look, like, what's he going to do? Like, crash into the wall? And it's what happened. Like, just unbelievable.
I mean, and there are just countless instances of that, or of drivers that are really good drivers that, you know, end up getting caught with somebody else and crash out. And I mean, you never know who's going to win the Indy 500.
Yeah. The Marco Andretti Hornish finish, or Scott Sharp crashing on the first lap out of pole position.
Yep.
You know, like, it's just incredible, that race. What it is. I mean, it is the best race in the world. I don't care what anyone says. I mean, it's the greatest spectacle in racing, without a question, for the whole variety of reasons. Obviously, the crowd being the biggest single-day sporting event in the world, the speed of the cars, the way those cars race at that track is just so suited. And then the restarts are, in my opinion, the greatest spectacle in racing. I mean, when you've got the whole field there slipstreaming each other, and you're three wide into turn one, and everyone's going for the win, and the crashes, obviously, that's what makes that race as well. I mean, there's some of the biggest crashes in motorsport.
Yeah.
you know, it's dangerous. I mean,
it absolutely is.
Yeah. You look at Bourdais and Dixon's crash. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are the biggest crashes in world motorsport, either in 2017 or ever, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
gotta be brave.
It's Scott Dixon's crash this year at the 500. I mean, I was very happy to see him walk away from that. But when I saw that crash, it was like our entire stands gasped at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We love the Indy 500. So Molly and I are both from Speedway, actually. We grew up just blocks from the track. So we've grown up around it and are obsessed with it. But it's so we love hearing when other people love it, especially drivers.
Yeah.
Cause we think that it's the best race, hands down, but there's such an energy there with that huge crowd that they have and all the pageantry that happens. That's one of the things that I love about it. I love all the things that lead up to the actual race as well. And I'm sure you guys feel that too. Cause when you're in the Indy 500, you know, there's all kinds of media things and, I'm sure you have a pretty rigorous schedule that week before the 500, even if you had more advance notice. But yeah, it's just there's just so much buzz about it and so many people interested in it. Mm-hmm. And just, yeah, the energy
it's just
of
amazing.
Everybody in the field. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody in the crowd. It's just awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's what we all kind of think about all the time, trying to win it. So
yeah, I mean that's got to be like a bucket list moment, you know, like on every racer's bucket list is to win the Indy 500.
Yeah, it is.
Cool.
It is.
Definitely awesome.
So now I noticed on some of your Instagram pictures you feature your watch. Are you a watch collector?
Yeah, I do watches. I think they're good, you know, fashion accessory.
Yeah.
If I put it that way.
Sure.
I completely agree with that. I actually have been wearing a watch since I was 7 years old. Because my dad was super into watches, and so I got super into watches. And so when I saw some of your Instagrams, I was like, ooh, he must like watches too. So, because I love it. I mean, a nice watch can really just be the best finishing piece to an outfit. And I know that sounds like an odd thing to say to a male race car driver, but it really, I mean, especially for men, like when you have a nice watch and and you're wearing a tux or a suit, like it just finishes it off.
I agree. And I mean, even how they market it on the drivers, race clubs these days.
Yeah.
Is it looks awesome, you know, when you watch Lewis Hamilton with his white gloves and it's got the black watch on, it's really cool.
It just looks sharp.
It does.
Yeah, it does. It just looks really sharp.
Yeah. No, so to answer your question, look, Ritmo, they used to sponsor the series and I'd won a Ritmo watch in Indy Lights or two of them, and I was wearing one of them at the 500 this year, and the owner Ritmo I got introduced to, and he said, oh, do you want the newer model of the watch you've got? So he gave me that on race day morning, and then
a week or two ago
he saw that I was in California and said I'll stop by my shop in on Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills and he gave me another like watch, a vintage one this time.
Oh,
nice. So yeah, I really like their stuff. It's really good. I think Marco Andretti has a deal with those guys. Dan Weldon love their stuff, so yeah, it's a cool brand, you know. Yeah. Honestly, I like their stuff, and I've also learned, you know, not that I ever bought any of these really expensive high-end products from these brands, but that there's so many brands now that make stuff that looks as good, and it's, you know what I mean, 10 times the price. It doesn't have all this ridiculous markup on it. So yeah. Ritmo's a good brand in that regard.
Okay.
Yeah, I have, I have a Folex, that's with an F. It's a Rolex that I bought in Chinatown in New York City. which it's real, but they definitely substituted the diamonds on the outside. And then, but my daily watch is not very expensive, but it charges by natural light and sunlight, so I never have to change the battery.
That's nice.
So that's Maya.
All right. Sorry about that.
Oh, you're fine.
Cut out a bit there.
No, you're fine. Okay, so if you had to pick like a hype song, something like, what song would you choose that would like get you revved up before races, get you in the right mindset?
I'm trying to remember which ones I like in particular.
Or you could just go with a style as well.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I mean, some kind of like rock songs, you know. Or,
okay, yeah.
There's a song called Headstrong by Trapped.
I remember
I liked that, like,
yeah,
on Mazda.
Okay.
There's newer ones I like now, but that's just what I can remember right now.
Sure.
Let's see. Do you have, let's see. Oh, okay. So is there anything else that you want to talk about as far as your career and all that?
No, I think I've touched all the important points.
Are we going to see you at the Indy 500 next year? I don't know if you ever answered that one.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a deal done because it's very early, but
sure.
Things certainly look like I will. You know, I have the support behind me and the establishment now that I should. Everything looks right that I'll have a deal done.
Fantastic.
And, you know, with some luck, I could have a deal done before the year's out. So
that's amazing.
That would be wonderful.
I'm going to say yes. It's a yes or no answer, but yeah, it's not a done deal yet.
Okay, but most likely.
Hopefully more than a week's notice.
Oh, yes.
I say you'll probably be bored. You'll do like 3 practice days and be like, okay, what am I going to do the rest of the month?
Yeah. It'll be.
You'll be like, I'm ready to go. That's all the practice I need.
It's mug and bun, obviously.
So, yeah. And when you're in Speedway, you're welcome to drop by and party with the rest of my family the night before. I don't know that you'll want to the night before a race, but you're welcome to stop by and at least eat.
Yeah. We're always in bed really early.
I know. You guys have the craziest schedule.
Yeah, you got to get up very early. So I'm always trying to be in bed at 6 or 7 p.m. if I can. You know, who knows what time you fall asleep in the end. But I'm just totally by myself for that afternoon, Saturday afternoon. And just, you've just got to put it all, just save energy and relax before the storm hits.
Yeah, so you've kind of done everything you can do. You just have to relax and get your mind right and get a good night's sleep.
Awesome.
Yes.
All right, well, we're going to just ask some random questions now.
Yep.
All right. Let's see. What?
Nothing.
Okay. Sorry, Molly was making hand signals at me, and I'm like, I don't know what you're saying. I don't know what you're saying to me. All right, when you drive on regular streets, do you feel like you have extra road rage because you're not surrounded by professional drivers?
Yeah, in all honesty, yeah.
Oh, I mean, no, that's fine.
Obviously, everybody in the world that's not a professional racing driver is an amateur driver. You know what I mean? I think it's fair to say that because, you know, we're professional drivers. So,
I mean, that is fair. None of us are getting paid to drive.
That's true.
Yeah, but what I meant more, it's not.
Well, we don't have that. We don't have the training. You guys.
That's exactly what
we don't have the knowledge and the experience and the training. Yeah,
that's exactly what I mean. So, you know, there could be a taxi driver out there that could be capable 500 if he was given the opportunity to have a career in racing. But yeah, so obviously people they're not able to kind of react and just flow and drive efficiently like we do, and traffic, obviously, when you travel all the time, and can kind of cause some frustration. And, you know, you look at how traffic jams are caused with people just texting and driving and being way overly conservative and all that kind of stuff. But it is what it is, you know, it's life.
Do you have, is the car you're driving right now? Is that a car you like to drive? Or what's your favorite car to drive and just driving to and from places?
I've had an Audi SUV, which I've liked. I like cruising cars quite a bit, like SUVs and so on.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, a cool sports car is obviously fun, but I'd say, you know, the next car I'm going to get will be probably a Mercedes AMG. They're just beautiful cars, the way they're engineered. And
they are beautiful.
Yeah. Nice. Just great cars, how they sound with their V8 engine and their exhaust. I would say Mercedes AMG.
Nice.
Yep.
Excellent. Let's see. Do you have any pets?
I don't. I love dogs, but I just travel too much to have my own. So I've got
a
few friends, you know, one that has a Labrador here in Miami, and I look after him sometimes and take him paddleboarding, and he'll just sit on the paddleboard, you know, where my feet are.
Oh, that's awesome.
Just sit there and look at, you know, go for a ride and get curious when he sees dolphins or whatever. So I love dogs, but probably until I have a family or something, I just don't see myself getting a dog. I just travel way.
I totally get that.
It's on a pet as well if they're just locked up in apartments all day. But if you've got a family,
or at least one other person,
and obviously
a
housewife that can help, and kids that can look after it as well, and
they can each get their energy out. You know, they can play together and tire themselves out.
Yeah, it's just better all round for the dog and yourself. So yeah, that's just something later in life, I think.
Sure,
absolutely.
I grew up with a golden retriever. And
oh my gosh, best dogs ever.
They're great.
Yeah, they are. So yeah.
Okay.
If you could be any animal, what animal would you be and why?
What the hell?
I love asking people this question. That's a fun fact about me. When I meet new people, I like to ask them this question.
Okay.
There are no wrong answers.
There might be.
Oh god, I don't know, you know, obviously probably something that's pretty powerful at the top of the food chain, you know, can do whatever it wants.
Sure.
Like a cheetah maybe.
Yeah,
or like a wolf, like a or a bear,
probably like a lion or something.
Lion.
Like that,
okay.
You know.
Okay.
Yeah, a lion I would say.
Alright.
So, stepping outside of motorsports, what's your favorite sport to watch? Now, there are wrong answers to this question.
Yeah. I really don't watch many other sports often, but I like playing tennis. I think it's a great game.
And yeah.
Grew up in Melbourne, so we have the Australian Open Grand Slam right there where I live. And that was a big thing that I used to watch when I was a kid. Pretty exciting time of the year in January, where for 2 weeks you could watch tennis and be sitting in bed, and then be a night game with, you know, like Andre Agassi or Pete Sampras.
Yeah.
Those big American names back in the day.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd say probably tennis is cool.
All right.
Yep.
We'll accept that answer.
Yeah, we'll allow that. When you're in Indianapolis, what's your favorite thing to do in the city?
He's only been here for like a week at a time.
I say, or have you not even had time to explore?
Eat out at some of the nice restaurants there, really, I would say.
Sure.
I love staying at the Alexander Hotel.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's hip and
attractive
really nice. And has a nice bar.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that. You know, I always love kind of going to party occasionally, but hate the whole aftermath, you know, the whole hangover.
God, it's like once you hit 30, hangovers are a real, very real thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I have a nephew who's 21 who said something. He was like, "Oh, I'm so hungover," and I was like, "You don't even know what hungover is."
Yeah.
I was like, "You're 21. Fuck you. You don't even know what hungover is."
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I'd just say.
Eat.
Yeah, the nightlife downtown is definitely the highlight down there. So if you what is it? One of the steakhouses. I forget the name.
Elmo's.
Prime 47.
Elmo's or Ruth's Chris?
Yeah, or Prime 47.
Oh, yeah.
One of the owners there, Jeff Mark, that's been involved with Brian Herder.
Mm-hmm.
That's always fun, you know, when you've got a good group of people eating there and having a drink or two. It's good. A number of the Indy drivers eat there mm-hmm. on Sunday night after the race, so I'm always there. And then when everyone's done, they go to the bar, and then everyone goes out to whatever the after party is. So always a really fun time, and it's also good to know that you made it through the race unscathed. It's kind of officially you're home free at that point.
Sure,
obviously, yeah.
All right, what is your most awkward or worst first date story?
I can't really think of it, to be honest. I'm sure there probably is one, but I really can't think of something in that regard. I've definitely had some experience, sure. But and witness some pretty funny and crazy things. Not necessarily on first dates, but I just, it's a little difficult for me to recall to answer your question.
That's not a bad thing, I guess.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's not. I say it's better than being like, wow, I don't know which one to choose.
That's true.
So, okay, now how long have you been in the States, James?
Since March 2005, so yeah. I guess it's coming up on 13 years.
Yeah. Do you get back to Australia very often, or?
Usually just over Christmas or for the Australian Formula One Grand Prix. It's a good weekend for me to go back and see friends and family, and I'm friends with a couple of the F1 drivers, so... Yeah, it's just good time to accomplish a lot all in one weekend, getting home and being probably in Melbourne for the most exciting weekend of the year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just Christmas and Australian Grand Prix, usually.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, what's the thing you miss the most from Australia while you're here in the States?
Well, it'd be family.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It would be family for sure. I would say, you know, it wouldn't be unfair to say that, you know, just the general quality of food in Australia is a little higher than the States.
Sure.
At least in Indiana.
Definitely as compared to Indiana.
But then also the cost of living is a lot higher. So, you know, there's always a trade-off.
Sure.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, do you have any other questions, Molly?
I think that's it. He has been a fantastic guest.
Yes, thank you so much, James, for being on. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. It's good timing.
So that interview happened.
James Davison, he was so gracious to take the time to talk to us before he jets off to Egypt to do some sightseeing.
Hope he has fun. Safe travels. And we really hope to see him next year at the Indianapolis 500.
Oh my gosh, I would love to see him. And if he thinks for a second that I'm not going to take him seriously when he said come up and say hi, obviously he's not listening to this podcast because no, I will yell at you from an escalator.
I don't believe that he has ever listened to this podcast.
Which is a dangerous game, by the way. Well, you know, I always say about us that we are...
I mean, I don't want to say
we're adorably non-threatening.
We are.
We really are. I mean,
you can't see us right now. It's really great for the audio.
Yeah, it's awesome for the audio. Sorry, we're doing more videos so that people can watch that as well.
Because we have a YouTube channel.
We do have a YouTube channel that we've been underutilizing, but yeah, we're adorably non-threatening, and 100%. So. I'm sure that if he does listen to any of our episodes, he's going to be like, oh shit, I didn't know how much they cussed. What have I agreed to be on? What have I done to myself?
I mean, it's fine. We didn't cuss too bad.
No, I think we did. I mean, I only said the F word once with him on the phone.
You're welcome, Mom.
Which, that's a record for
me. That's my Christmas gift to our moms.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. An amazing interview. Mine will have listened to this before tomorrow is done. Oh, boy.
You know what? For what your mom said last year, I think I can say anything I want.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. But again, thank you, James.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
It's great. We appreciate it. Hearing stories and some great things to say. So hope you enjoyed it as much as we did.
Yeah.
Both James and the listeners.
Yes. We hope you guys all enjoyed that. So, and definitely root for James if you're at a race where he's driving. He's a hell of a driver. He's a beast on the track. He's got great instincts. So, yeah, definitely root for him. Beth actually picked him this last year. Do you remember that?
I don't. Did she really?
Yeah, Beth picked him to win because she picked Catherine Legge. Catherine Legge, but we call her Legge. The 2 years that she was there, because we like to say the word Legge.
Right.
And Beth prefers to pick a female, but I'm pretty sure... Well, she just does.
She picked James. Well, she prefers to pick a female.
She does prefer to pick a female, but I believe your second choice was Pippa this year.
That's true.
Yeah. And so that was the only female in the field. And so Beth loves sport of the women. She also loves a good underdog story.
True.
And so when Pippa wasn't available, there were a few other drivers that she kind of cared about. They had all been picked. She was like, who's number 33? And I was like, James Davison. And she was like, put me down. And I remember when he was in the lead, she turned around and was like double middle fingers and was like, I'm taking everybody's money this year. She's like, last place to first place. Hell yeah.
Which happened. So it's exciting.
And then when he crashed, I was upset for James, but...
Not upset that
Beth lost. And so I definitely rubbed that in her face. I was probably more celebratory than I should have been.
Well, it happens in this dance. Yeah. It's fine.
I mean, we get pretty dead serious about our shit, so...
Well...
I think we should white flag
this. I think we need to white flag this episode for everybody.
Okay. Well, my white flag, I'm looking forward to Lights at the Brickyard tomorrow night, or tonight, because this will come out on Wednesday. So we're going Wednesday the 22nd. It's going to be a good time. We're doing a tapas style menu. I got to go shopping because I'm making some cheesecake bars tonight, which will be delicious. And yeah, we're going to check some lights, drink a little wine, have a good time. What about you? What's your white flag?
Well, that was my white flag.
Well, I took it.
I hate you.
I took it. Oh, you know what else my white flag is?
Damn it, are you taking another thing?
I am. I was giddy that James was also into watches because he was like, well, I'm not really, but I kind of am. And I was like, says every person who owns watches, because we're like, we don't want you to know our obsession or like how much we have these insured for. But I want to make it, I want to act like it's not a big deal because at the end of the day, watches are super fucking expensive.
But is he a scuba diver?
No, he's not a scuba diver.
Sorry, you know I like to ask that question.
I know, he's not a scuba diver. That's the other James, that's Hinchcliffe.
But whom you have yelled at from an escalator.
Yes, yes I have.
Yes. Gosh, you took my white flag, but I still am excited about it because it's really the kickoff for Christmas.
It is the kickoff for Christmas.
And it's going to be a really hard week because I'm drinking Wednesday night, then I got to run a 4 mile, and then I'm drinking Thursday, and then Friday I might just buy my couch.
Good for you.
But I'm just real excited that we had a great interview. And,
I am too.
I guess my white flag will be plugging our social media because that didn't happen.
Oh, that did not happen. So you should check us out on all social media.
Especially, so it's Wednesday. So Wednesday, because Wednesday evening, we're going to be doing some like live Twitters. We'll probably do a few Snapchats from like the Brickyard. So Twitter is @FastCarsN317. That's IN. Our Snapchat is
Fast Cars, FSTGRLS. It's Fast Cars, Fast Girls, but there's no vowels in the Fast Girls because it was too many characters.
Too many.
So Fast Cars, FSTGRLS.
Yes. Instagram, because we'll probably do some, I'll do pictures the next day.
We'll definitely do Instagram at Fast Cars, Fast Girls. On Facebook, you can do www.facebook.com/FastCarsFastGirls, or you can simply search Fast Cars, Fast Girls in your search bar. You can also go to our website, www.FastCarsFastGirls.com, and we officially have the rights to it now. It's not like we did, and a friend of mine set it up. We just hadn't done shit with it. And so over the holiday...
We still haven't done it yet.
We haven't done it yet, but over the holiday, we're going to get some stuff up. So we will be blasting our social media when that page is up and running, and then you guys can go there for other news. We'll have blogs. Molly and I will post independently, so you'll get to feel a little bit more of each of us individually, in addition to hearing us on the air. And at the end of the day, it's all so that we can get media creds.
Also,
it's also for love of the sport.
Thank you.
It's also for love of the sport. And for our fans.
For you guys. And also, we have a YouTube page. It's, I don't know, if you search Fast Cars, Fast Girls on YouTube, we actually have stuff up there from prior episodes.
And the most recent one, it's a little bit longer. If anybody watches it, I watched part of it and then I could only listen to it and not watch. And if anybody wants to know if I was having, like, focal seizures with my blinking, I wear the contacts that you can leave in for 30 days. And at the end of the month, my eyes are super dry because I almost never take them out because it grosses me out since I'm a nurse. And so I just add eye drops and whatever, but I blink an excessive amount in that. And I know, but I lost my favorite glasses. The other one's cut into the side of my head, and I've been wearing the contacts so long, and I remember my favorite pair. Like, I almost called America's Best contacts and eyeglasses and ordered another pair because I can't find them.
Okay.
My daily eyeglasses, I'm not having a stroke or anything. My contacts were just old.
If you go there, we're going to have some fun content too, not just clips from the episodes, which we'll also push out on other social media.
We will, but any kind of fun things that we go to or do or just random clips.
Like, I think we'll do like a video from tomorrow/today.
Yep, Lights of the Breaker Orders, we call it Liquor and Lights. We'll do some clips from there.
I'm sure you will see my father give a lot of shade.
We'll probably do a few interviews with our parents, maybe ask them if they thought that we would turn out this way or, you know, different things. They're fucking liars if that's what they say. They are damn liars.
The answer is no.
Damn liars. They raised us to be like this.
That's true.
They raised us to be little protesters.
Yep.
To question authority.
Yep. You have nobody to blame but yourself, family.
Nobody to blame but yourself, so. All right. Well, I guess we should probably wait to check out on that. We talked through that whole song.
All right. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Happy Thanksgiving. Oh, you know what? What's one thing that you're real thankful for this year? What's the thing? Top three things you're thankful for.
I need three things. First of all, what an amazing month of May. Did we have?
Oh my God.
What an amazing month of May. I don't know if we'll ever be able to top that.
I mean,
I hope that we can.
I mean, I hope it's only going up, but no kidding.
But
just
if we
awesome.
Don't, I'm excited about that. I am so thankful that I got to travel to Hawaii and leave the continental United States. And
I'm
go,
so
like,
glad you
fly
came with
over
me. Oh my God,
ocean.
That was so much fun to have you there.
It was amazing. It was relaxing. It was beautiful.
Fed your soul.
It did. It did.
Both of us, not just yours. I mean, mine too. Yeah. It was like, we both got to do so much of what we love.
Yes.
And because we're both extroverts and introverts, we're combined. It was like...
We had our own separate time.
We had time together. That was a great trip.
It was a good trip.
I mean, I was a little nervous because you and I hadn't traveled together in 12 years.
I know, but it worked out just fine.
It worked out just fine. I mean, I figured it'd be fine. It was like, it wasn't a real concern. It was just like, we haven't traveled together in a long time.
Man, what are we going to do when we both need introvert time? Oh, just do it.
We're just like, hey, I need some time alone. See ya.
Bye.
Meet you back at the hotel room before dinner. Cool. Deuces.
And had some good seafood too. I mean.
We did.
I want to be thankful because it's 5 years coming up in December for Dad, but I'm thankful for that every single day, so I don't think it needs to be mentioned.
True story.
I mean, it does need to be mentioned.
It does,
and,
but...
And, you know, donate.
Well, but we'll talk about all that when it's his anniversary.
We should.
Yeah, his anniversary week, we'll do a big push, yeah.
We should. Surprise, spoiler alert. I think the biggest thing was I got a new job about 3 weeks ago, and I'm very thankful. It's a lot less stress.
You're loving it.
I'm loving it. I love my boss. I get to just research and do policy work and loved litigation, but I like stepping into policy.
Good.
All right. How about you?
Well, that's awesome. So three things from this year that I'm thankful for. I'm also thankful for the trip to Hawaii.
Definitely.
My friends Sabina and Noel got married, and so God bless Sabina for getting her master's out in Hawaii. So we had an excuse to go out there.
Love it.
Because I don't think that I would have gone had I not had a reason to go. And
I agree.
It's definitely a place that everybody should see at least once in their life.
I definitely agree.
Yeah. Very, very cool. I got to scuba dive out there. I saw an albino dolphin.
Ooh, yeah.
All white dolphin. You saw your first sea turtle when we were scuba diving.
It was so exciting.
Or we were snorkeling. But yeah, I got to scuba dive in Hawaii. I mean, I snorkeled with manta rays. Just some once in a lifetime experiences that we had. The helicopter ride over the
volcano. Helicopter ride over the volcano.
Oh, that was,
that was pretty badass.
Just indescribably.
You can't.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Secondly, I'm really thankful for this podcast, actually. Hmm. Because we've had so much fun doing it, and I hope that our listeners enjoy it as much as we enjoy doing it. Because we'd love to grow that and make this, someday, fingers crossed, our full-time job. But yeah, I've had so much fun. And like you've said in the past, it's like we get to hang out with our best friend every week and shoot the shit. About something we love. And we both have loved IndyCar for a long time, but we've kind of just, because of this podcast, it's caused us to thrust ourselves into this whole world that I don't know that we would have otherwise, because sometimes we kind of stay introverted, extroverted with ourselves and don't branch out because we just have so much fun by ourselves that we're like, we don't need anybody else.
Yes, whatever.
But just this past 6 months, we've met so many fans, drivers, families associated with racing. Pat McAfee, who we're gonna start a campaign in the next month or so to try to get Pat on this show. So just be ready. Everybody who listens, we're gonna be doing some hardcore social media stuff.
That's news to me.
It is news to Molly. I decided it today. I didn't tell her. But we're gonna work hard on getting Pat to be on the show.
That's also the theme of this podcast.
Yeah, that's news to Molly.
Oh, this is new.
I just decide things and Molly's like, fuck, I hope that's legal.
Okay, let's just go.
We've met so many amazing people, have gotten to hear such great stories, and just connect with so many different kinds of people and from all over the country. And that has just been awesome.
It has been.
And then the third thing that I'm thankful for is that my family's growing because my baby sister is pregnant. And so I'm going to have a new niece or nephew.
It's going to be so exciting.
In like 23 weeks, something
it's
like that.
It's a race, baby.
Right? Due at the beginning of May.
It's a race, baby.
I think it's going to be a girl, but we'll see.
Will she name it Pippa if it's a girl?
No, she will not.
Will she name it Catherine Leggy?
She will not. Actually, I don't think they're sharing names.
No, I don't.
Well, you know what? She shared some boy names, but she didn't share any. She told me like one or two, but I'm not going to share them over here.
Yeah, obvi.
Yeah. Like, they're not telling everybody, but I was like, you have to tell me on your sister.
Yes.
Yeah. So I would say that would be the top three things that I'm the most thankful for this year. So
we're also thankful for you, our listeners.
We are thankful for you guys and for all your support and everything you guys do to. When you retweet, when you comment on things, when you
say hey,
interact with us, say hey to us at events, we love it. We love this. We love that you love it as well. So if you ever see us out and about, definitely come say hi, take a selfie with us. You'll make it onto our Facebook page,
Insta maybe Twitter.
Yep. So have a happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy your friends. Enjoy your family. Lots of blessings for everybody in the next year.
We'll see you next week.
Well, yeah, but I'm saying the next year until Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not like done. We're not like NBC where I had a fall finale 3 weeks after it became fall.
Seemed definitive.
I know, it did.
All right.
It did. It's like on New Year's Eve when people are like, see you next year. And you're like, ha, 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 ha. You're hilarious.
Every year.
Like, that was so funny when I was 8.